Wondrous, wondrous indeed.
Hello, this is Jane Clark, the historian at Aintree Racecourse, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition with Alex Lefchuk.
Okay, well, the weather today, highs of 13 degrees centigrade, lows of 11 degrees centigrade. There will be a dry start to the day, but there will be thickening cloud with outbreaks of rain and breezy conditions as we actually proceed through the day. So, good news there, I suppose. Kat, what's the weather like in Norwich?
Well, do you know what? It's beautiful this morning. We've had a little bit of frost and sort of like foggy morning, but it's now taking a beautiful clear sky and we've got sunshine. It's looking good. It's looking good.
Well, there you are, you see. Great stuff. Okay, so it's Claire Margerison's first ever show. Is it your first ever show, Claire, as far as the first ever radio show ever?
Ever.
Ever. Yeah. And, of course, you're one of Harrogate's finest.
Yes.
And you're doing hopefully a reasonably interesting module in Level 3 for English, which is science fiction, of course.
Yes.
Which is why coming, you see one of us,
good
Emma.
Good choice. Exactly.
Kat, would you like to wear your public relations extraordinaire hat with respect to Kat publicity? Would you like to quiz Claire? Or, indeed, find out, you know, how Emma found the excitement of Spectre in Sheffield? Or, indeed, how Jessica has been working busily on her super speed shorthand. It's up to you, Kat. The floor is officially yours.
Wow, there's so much choice this morning. Yeah. Alex, I don't know, you see, what a plethora of stuff you've got going on. Well, I have to ask Emma, what was the film like? Was it really living up to the hype?
It was really brilliant, actually. I tried to not get myself too excited for it because I'd heard sort of mixed reviews, so I didn't want to get too hyped and then be let down. But it was really good. I did enjoy it. I thought it was more of a simple plot than the other James Bond films because a lot of people come away from them thinking, I have no idea what happened. But this one was really easy to follow, so it's a lot simpler. But it was really good still. I did enjoy it. I would recommend going to see it.
Marks out of 10, how would you go?
Oh, I'd say maybe a 7. 7 or 8.
7.
Intriguing.
We're going to see then.
Richard Fitzwilliams, in the post which we popped up on Facebook and the whole thing, as you know, he kind of went for a 6 for his own point of view, but an 8 for the fans.
Yeah.
So you've gone precisely for that. That was extraordinary. Good start, Kat. Where to now?
Well, I think I've got to go to Jessica and ask how she's getting on with that.
You don't have to.
I do. It's intriguing. How's it going, Jessica?
It's going all right, actually. I'm probably on 60 to 70 words per minute, so hopefully I'll pass the exam, which is coming up soon this month. So, yeah, thank you.
Oh, no doubt. A bit more practice and you'll be there, won't you? It seems a difficult thing to do. I had a go at doing it myself some years ago and felt that, you know, once I'd got the hang of it, it was great, but then I didn't use it. So I lost all that skill, a bit like a foreign language, really, isn't it?
It is.
You've got to really go and practice, haven't you?
Yeah, you definitely do. You have to keep up with it. I've learnt that from now going away for summer holidays and coming back. It's a bit daunting now.
Well,
I bet it is.
Use it or lose it, that's the official line. Which, I suppose, leaves Claire.
It does, and my question for Claire is, how does it feel being part of the posse this morning with Alex in the studio?
It was a bit daunting, but I'm not as nervous as I thought I would be, and it's just, it's good fun. It's a really good experience to have.
5 minutes and 40 seconds into the show, it's all going well.
No disasters.
Okay, quick question. We'll be talking about this with psychologist Donna Dawson later on in the production. Would you rather win a windfall or would you win in love? Apparently, Britons say that winning money makes them as happy as finding the love of their life. Question is, are we becoming a materialistic nation with financial wins making us as happy as key life successes? The psychology of winning. Emma, where would you go for? Do you go for winning the money? Love of life. Love of life, what are they about? Where are you going to go?
Love of life?
Yeah. Oh. it's a new pearl by Mecca Bingo. Kat, any thoughts on this? Where do you sit on this one?
Yeah. I'm very much in the camp of love. I mean, how can you possibly put money over everything else? I mean, it's a sad indictment of our time, isn't it, when we start to become so materialistic that it's dominating everything. I mean, that's sad. It's very sad.
Oh, it's win-win-win. It's a poll by Mecca Bingo, which provides an insight into the UK's attitude towards winning. Jessica, you've just become a citizen of the country, naturalised and so on. So from your own perspective, is it win at all costs, or what's your line of this?
No, it's definitely love of life, I think.
Okay, and Claire?
Definitely love as well. I think that a man doesn't count as money, counts as happiness, as the song says.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, we'll find out more from Donna Dawson in the second hour of the programme, which actually means Claire will probably be around to pick up on the whole sort of system whilst you guys will just have a pleasure podcast.
I hate missing the end of the show.
Well, that's all right. We'll all work on. You'll also miss Jamie Stevens, celebrity hairdresser. Chap has actually won the Men's Hairdresser of the Year for the third time, which actually places him into the British Hairdresser of the Year's Hall of Fame for men's hairdressing. I have no interest whatsoever in this, but apparently men are very concerned about losing their hair. The follicle challenge amongst us. What the hey? Just let it go, etc. Effectively, a fifth of people's survey suggests that thinning hair makes them less attractive, and a quarter actually makes them think it looks makes them look older than they actually are. It's quite extraordinary. This is all to do with pelidophobia, the fear of losing hair. Pelidophobia.
My granddad lost like most of his hair in his late 20s, early 30s. Well, so, you know, the majority of his life he's been bald.
At the end of the day, Emma, you know, grass doesn't grow on a busy street.
Exactly.
And don't get me started on virility, Kat, because that'll be a different line entirely. Not for this time of the morning, but there you go.
No.
Oh, please. You know. But anyway, Jamie Stevens, who actually, although he is Men's Hairdresser of the Year, actually has fear anxiety himself because he also has thinning hair. And he's going to talk a bit about that, together with psychologist Emma Kenny, who's going to be sharing the psychological impact of the anxiety surrounding hair loss. Look, there are more things important in life, you know. Please, you know. Well, no, it's always difficult from that point of view, but still. We'll consider that in the fullness of time. Kat, a quick plug for Sound and Nick's Vision, which actually I've just realised, Volume 11 goes out on Bonfire Night.
Does it?
There's a bang with a buck, isn't there, with respect to Nick and
fireworks.
Sue? Whoa. So this is 2 minutes past seven, and what's it all about? Why should people tune in to Sound and Nick's Vision, download the podcast, or certainly listen live to Siren 107.3 FM on the 5th of November at 2 minutes past seven in the evening?
It is an exciting, exciting show this week. It's full of great music, especially by Nick himself, Nick Elliott, rock photographer. You've got Sue Royce there joining in with the analysis of each of the different tracks. And, of course, you've got yourself, Alex. So what is there not to like with all those people there, great music, it's good chat, it's good fun. You've got to listen in.
Exactly. I just had to sit there and worry about hair loss, but I'm like, press the occasional button. It's just to go with it. That's the important thing. Jessica, would you like to put those last two questions to the one and only Kat? I think it's her first ever debut on the sort of this time in the morning, really. Because she needs time to reacclimatise when she travels up to Lincoln and then down to Norwich again, up to Lincoln, which is phenomenal. Really. So go for it, Jessica.
So Kat, it's lovely getting back to you again. And have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
It's been absolutely stupendous.
Wonderful. And we will be hearing from you soon.
Oh, if I'm invited on, I'll be there with bells on. Thank you very much for the invite.
You're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM, guaranteed to keep you safe from giant lizards.
I don't know, life continues. In its own little merry way, the Pat Metheny Group with David Bowie, This Is Not America. Of course, the theme to The Eagle and the Snowman. Quick reference to something which just burst through the John Wenham Events Diary, which was St Barnabas Lincolnshire Hospice hosting a big band night on Saturday the 7th of November from 7 p.m. At William Farr School in Welton. William Farr School, of course, host of the current holder of the Miss Lincoln title, Miss Teen Lincoln. Yeah, so there we are. That's Eva MacDonald, who's not with us again today because she's so having so much fun in Blackpool.
I know, it's so sad. She's abandoned us. I think she's moved to be Miss Blackpool.
Well, it is a thought. She did very well. Didn't quite get Miss Teen UK, but she did very well indeed. So, you know, we're not banning her from the studio. I'm sure she will return in the fullness of time. Meanwhile, if you fancy going to her old school, we'll probably put the plaque up, you know, home of Miss Teen Lincoln. That's William Farr School in Walton. You can listen to guests to music from the 1930s and the 1950s performed by a 23-piece band called Room 21. So there we are, all happening at William Farr School on Saturday the 7th of November. You can actually contact St Barnabas Lincolnshire Hospice to find out further information. And so it goes. Richard Fitzwilliams, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Looking forward just fleetingly to catching up, because, of course, it was James Bond.
Well, this is, as you know, in the Facebook correspondence that we'd had, other social networking sites obviously are available, but the critical thing, and you may have caught this earlier in the early part of the show, was it's all very well you doing your TV interviews and your sort of chitter-chatter and all the rest of them, but it's very important, and that's fine. And finishing off with, well, I'd give it a 6 for myself and 8 for the fans. But ultimately, as you know, we wanted to know, what was Emma Tinson going to make of it when she decided to go and see it in IMAX in 2D, really.
It was such a letdown when I got there.
All the journey to Sheffield as
well. I know.
Well. It's just, you know. But I know, Richard, you're keen to find out, what did Emma Tinson make of Spectre?
Certainly.
Go, Emma.
Well, I really liked it, actually. I was kind of worried that it wasn't going to be as good as I thought it would be, but I really did enjoy it. I thought the plot wasn't necessarily the most clever thing. It was a bit simple. And I did see quite a few of the things coming. There wasn't any big twists, but I did still really enjoy it. I thought visually it was brilliant. The action, and you were right when you said about that opening sequence, that was probably my favourite bit. I really enjoyed it. So I'm going to give it a 7, which is pretty much in between what you said.
Yes, well, I mean, this is what I thought for fans of Bond and those who like movies with lots of action, lots of stunts, and with that spectacular opening and with the brilliant visuals. And of course, Daniel Craig, I think we probably both agree, is a marvellous Bond. But what the actual action, what actually happens with all the fist fights and wonderful fashion suddenly metamorphosing and rather strange characters appearing from time to time. I mean, it is an absurd plot. My
really? Absurd plot in Bond?
I would love to have seen a more... Well, I mean, for example, when he goes into the Spectre meeting just simply because he's got a ring. I mean, you wouldn't get in.
Well, I don't know. That's how many people sign up for full-time courses at the University of Lincoln, actually. They've got the ring. It brings them to the city.
That's the exact panel I knew you'd make.
Anyway, in a dystopian near future, single people, according to the laws of the city, are taken to the hotel, where they are obliged to find a romantic partner in 45 days or be transformed into beasts and sent off into the woods. Nothing to do with a Bond movie, more a kind of drama documentary about life in Harrogate. But it's The Lobster, and I know you're keen, after last week's Bond special, to go into the whole notion of The Lobster. One claw up for yes, two claws up for no. Let's run with it, Richard. Talk about The Lobster.
Well, The Lobster is a rather... it's billed as a comedy, and I suppose you could say it was a surreal experience. I mean, as you say, it is an extraordinary plot, and a movie is of the sort. It's directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, and we must encourage imagination. What we want in films so often is the unusual. Where would we be without it? David, played by Colin Farrell, arrives at this hotel with a dog who happens to be his brother. I simply mention this because, of course, this probably happens every day at the University of Lincoln. But
you took the words right out of my mouth. You know, people turn up with animals and they think, oh, it's my brother, right? There we are.
45 days you've got to find a mate. Yes. And if, of course, you can use a tranquilizer dart to stun an SKP, you can add one day to your 45 in the hope that you will find a mate. Now, this has been, a lot of critics have liked this movie, and they've talked about it as being some form of parable about loneliness. It's extended rather far beyond, I have to say, my zones of toleration, because it is 2 hours long, and despite the fact Colin Farrell is very good, and despite the fact that we meet the short-sighted woman among the loners. The loners are those who escaped from the hotel, and they're led by the rather superb, the leader of the loners, Alia Sadu, who, as you know, after blue is the warmest colour, I'm a great admirer of, but who I fear, I felt, was wasted in the Bond movie. I didn't feel the chemistry.
Let it go, Richard, let it go.
No, it's only just come, so we'll be hearing more and talking more about it, I suspect, in the coming period. But the problem with The Lobster is that if you don't buy the plot, you can get very, very impatient with this movie. It is really too long at 2 hours. That is the one difficulty. And the other problem is, having got impatient, you can get very, very impatient indeed. So whereas this movie gripped me over much of the first hour and what happens in the hotel and how they treat you, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do, and all the rules. It's the surreal universe that's been created. It, for me, it didn't work, and others I've spoken to really got impatient with it. But if you like it, and if you like this type of movie, then obviously you will be gripped by it.
Sounds like Being John Malkovich to me. Malkovich. Okay, let's do a routine. Claire, from what Richard said, The Lobster is the sort of thing that says, yes, that sounds as though it's ideal for kind of addressing my issues relating to masculinity and fascination with science fiction.
Yeah, no, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, but one of the problems I would say is that this movie is, if you like it, you'll love it and you can intellectualise it. But if you are annoyed or bored, you may come out sooner than you expected.
Well, I mean, if you're going to go there and intellectualise that, I mean, please. What are your thoughts, The Lobster?
It seems like a really odd concept for a film, but that kind of intrigues me that it's different and it's something that's not really looked at before. But I'm not sure if it's a kind of film where there's not much going on, 2 hours, I'm not sure I'd be able to pay attention.
A lot less time than Bond.
I know, but there was, like, explosions and... But, no, you see, it sounds like an interesting concept, so I'd be curious about it, but I'm not sure.
Jessica?
Well, Alex was just showing us the trailer, and in terms of, like, mise en scène, it's quite appealing. It looks really clear. But 2 hours, I don't know if I'd be able to sit for that long. I'm quite fidgety.
Jessica, if you can actually use a film theory term such as mise en scène, you know, that's very impressive. You know, for a journalism student to actually drop that one in, that's nicely put together at 22 minutes past 8 at
some
time.
Exactly.
Very, very impressive. I think we should give it a shot. I mean, it's got Rachel Weisz in. You know, what's not to appreciate? We've got Rachel Weisz in there. It's brilliant.
Well, Rachel Weisz, always good. Yeah. Since The Constant Gardener and... suddenly last summer I saw on stage. I mean, one of my favourites. A very unusual role for her. But as I say, I mean, it will appeal enormously to some, as it has. And, of course, it will have the reverse effect. If you... Well, I mean, you can more or less...
You're sounding borderline exasperated there, Richard. Borderline exasperated.
Borderline exasperated because I turned impatient.
There we are.
We need this type of movie to liven films up. It was a
comedy, romance, and science fiction. What's not to appreciate? You know, let's face it. It's focus on the
not all 2001 and Planet of the Apes and Solaris.
exactly so. So where are you going to take us now, Richard? Is it more reflections on the London Film Festival or something completely different?
Very fleetingly, I'd like to do a reflection on London Film Festival and then move to Beasts of No Nation, which I think is a very important film. But the film festival I just wanted to pay tribute to because was last week, obviously, we were concentrating on James Bond. 240 films, over 20 galas from 72 countries, an amazing preponderance this time. Or the emphasis, should I say, is that the 20% of the films are directed by women. In reality, overall, it's only 11%, and this was the theme of the film, Strong Women, and little doubt that... It was a magnificent effort putting this together, opened by Suffragette, which, of course, a particularly important film about women and for women and made by them. And closing with Steve Jobs, a remarkable number of films. I saw Trumbo, Brooklyn, Lady in the Van.
Did Brooklyn make you cry, Richard? Because the book made me cry, even though it's not necessarily, I'm not in the target audience. It was a very heart-moving book, Brooklyn.
A very, very fine film. We'll be discussing it quite soon, actually.
Good.
And no question that it's just I wanted to pay tribute to those who put together something that's very impressive. It doesn't have, for example, the festival winners. There's a feature award for those in competition, which was won by a film called Chevalier, and first feature won by The Witch, set in the 17th century, and a best documentary by won by Sherpa. It doesn't have conventional award ceremonies, but this is something that helps to put London on the map cinematically, and of course the number of films shot here and our talent, I mean, this needs no elaboration from me. But to switch to a totally different topic, a very controversial film, not because of its merit. Everyone's agreed this is a brilliant film. It's directed by Cary Fukunaga, who's sin nombre about immigration into the United States and how and why this takes place. And then Jane Eyre, a very interesting take on the famous novel, is a wonderful director. It's set in West Africa, and this is at a time of political instability, and you see the real heart of darkness, because it's about the problems, the difficulties, the horrors of the child soldier who is orphaned and forced by the common. This is the wonderful performance by Agu. It's really Agu's story. He's played by Abraham Atta, and he's forced by the commander, Idris Elba, to join the militia. They will otherwise have killed him, and he's bloodied. He and the boy he befriends face the horrors of war, rape, killing, looting, that goes in a country which has subsided into utter chaos, and how the battalion is manipulated by the commander, and how he in turn is manipulated by the politicians, and how this movie pans out. Visually, absolutely brilliant. I really recommend it. But here is the problem, and this is why it has become so controversial. No one, as I say, is disputing its undoubted merits and extraordinary acting. Idris Elba, absolutely superb. Abraham Atta, a wonderful performance. And a very interesting movie, also climactically, no spoilers from me. But the facts are, this is the first feature film that's produced by Netflix. Netflix's intention, that of streaming a movie simultaneously when it's released in movie theaters to homes, is highly controversial. In my view, it's very dangerous for various reasons, but it's only had a very limited release in cinemas in London, and certainly in the States, only 30 cinemas in a particular chain, so that it will qualify for the Oscars, have taken it, because of course this Netflix, the whole idea that you cut out or could cut out it by paying for streamlining a movie into your home without waiting for the 90-day period where it's released in movie theatres, it's very controversial.
Okay, and the interesting thing, of course, it's set in an unnamed African nation, but we've been looking at the trailer, courtesy of Netflix, in the studio. Jessica, Beasts of No Nation, first of all, would you consider going to see it? And then, how would you like to see it? Would you like to see it in the cinema, or would you like to say, no, I'm signing up for that Netflix deal?
I think I'd really, really like to go and see that. It looks really good, and the acting, was it Abraham Atta?
Abraham Atta plays young Agu, and he is one of the child soldiers in this in the militia. And I would also mention that the realism of the action sequences, the handheld cameras, the way that's shot, I mean, it adds a documentary feel to it. And then also, the visually, it's so superb, and you can contrast the beauty of the countryside, the lush vegetation, with the horrors that the movie recounts.
Claire?
I think it looks really interesting. You don't get many sort of films that look at the kind of other voice, and it's a story that I think needs to be told, and I think it's interesting that Netflix, as a sort of smaller company, have chosen to look at that voice, and I think they kind of tend to do that quite a lot with their productions. So, yeah, no, I'd definitely like to see it.
And in the cinema, or via Netflix?
I already have Netflix, yeah. So probably I'd probably see it in Netflix. But then if I enjoyed it, I'd probably go and see it in the cinema as well, just for that experience on the big screen.
Okay.
I would mention, of course, this is the big problem, because if you cut out the 90 days, whereby at the moment a movie is released in the movie theatres and then subsequently you can see it in any way you choose, you've got obvious problems when it comes to prices, jobs, what does and doesn't cheapen a movie. I mean, I've been having this whole debate, nearly 500 posts.
I know, Richard. I've seen them. Oh, it's been
like
battling.
Them, I didn't know you'd seen the posts.
Jessica, would you Netflix or the big screen?
I think it would look much better on the big screen, but because I'm a poor student, Netflix is winning for me.
Okay, and Emma?
Well, I mean, looking at the trailer, the film visually looks fantastic. And obviously it's quite an emotive film as well. So it's definitely a story that I would be interested in. But I think I would have to see it in the cinema just because of how visually it looks. It did look amazing. But I'm not against Netflix. I think it's a really
They've
interesting
brought the world
source.
Daredevil and the whole Marvel series to actually lead up to the Defenders.
Yeah, I think as a company they come out with some really good original programming. So
no doubt about that. By the way, of course, with House of Cards and also with the ability that you can stream older films and so forth, there's that aspect to Netflix, which of course they've got. I think some 70 million now who subscribe overall.
Mm. But you're still concerned. I mean, I kind of thought it's a natural progression, isn't it? I mean, just in the same way as technically, if you like the movie when you see it at the cinema, why not buy it instantly on DVD or sort of some version for?
Well, you've got the real problem, and this must be mentioned. Will people go to the movies if they can have it streamed online without?
But they still go to the theatres. I mean, Emma, you went to.
There it is so different. Because, and here's another point that very often go to the theatre or the opera. It's very, considered very much an occasion. One of the things I so resent is so many people from time to time have said, oh, well, they can see films any old time, which indeed, of course, they can. And it's interesting to see the theatre and the opera, the way they've developed this business of watching a play live as
in the cinema.
Absolutely excellent idea, you see. I mean, that has also kept the sense of occasion, whereas, I mean, Beast of No Nation streamed to home. Well, I mean, fair enough if you can't afford it, but you could wait 90 days, give it that chance. It only was in two cinemas because there's a boycott of the big distributors in America, and also it had trouble getting distribution in Britain at Curzon Cinemas. You really do see the cinema experience was marvellous, but it also shocks you because it's such a deeply powerful and extremely disturbing film. We all know of the ghastly tales of the amputees in Sierra Leone, for example. I mean, that obviously is what inspired this movie. But seeing it in the cinema is infinitely preferable. But the problem is, well, so obviously, how many people will go if you can stream movies live?
Better to, I think, with Netflix, though, it's at least they're kind of not watching it illegally. And I think if someone wanted to watch something online, at least they're going to watch it on Netflix rather than doing it illegally, I think.
The piracy argument is obviously undoubtedly a case, because, I mean, with the way we were searched with all the mobiles handed in, even with Spectre, because, of course, Spectre was.
Yeah, but you look well dodgy, Richard. I've told you that before, the way you're sort of, kind of settling in like some kind of Cold War spy.
With Alex, because you see, if you, in a film, so often you can tell the villains by just looking at them. Whereas if only in real life it was that simple.
Well, maybe this is just another version of fantasy. I tell you what, Richard, I'll throw this one. Emma, should we actually raise this with Phil Leonis to put it on the agenda for Wednesday's
Midnight
Drive?
Yeah, I think so. Phil would have a lot to say.
Okay. The big movie chains are all boycotting Beast of No Nation. Now, because it's got a screening in 31 cinemas throughout the country, including LA, that will mean that it will be one of those that can be considered for the Oscars. But this is really a serious war. There are certain other films, Brad Pitt's War Machine is one, the Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, though not directed by Ang Lee, is another that are intended to be released by Netflix. So the future of cinema is very much something that's being debated here. And though I personally, as you've probably been reading, been in a minority in my particular view on it, it does stir up emotions.
Well, if you want to have the full experience of cinema and happen to find yourself in the Lincoln area on Wednesday, the 4th of November, next Wednesday, we start the first in a series of six classic science fiction movies, launching, of course, with Logan's Run. And you can even download the podcast commentary already, Clavia. I've put the
so
things up
multimedia.
There. Exactly.
Brilliant.
So, you know, it's there. It's Phil Learness reflecting on the movie Logan's Run for all sorts of other areas.
Well, I'd be very interested to hear what he thinks.
Yeah, well, there we are, you see. And Netflix as well, of course. Yes, marvellous. Anyway, that's MTech at the University of Lincoln. So just let us know if you're interested. Chloe, will you be there?
I definitely will be, yes.
Emma, will you be there?
I will be there.
Jessica? Depends on the shorthand, really.
Yeah, depends on that.
Okay, Emma, last two questions for Richard before. I think you have to head off and do exciting things as well.
Richard, have you had a reasonably good telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, indeed. I think we've covered quite a few topics.
We have indeed. And will you be joining us again on the programme next week?
I most certainly hope so.
And watch out for those lobsters.
Oh, yes, or whatever you might change it to.
I can feel you breathing with your hair on my skin as we lie here within the night. I'll pull the sheets when it's cold on your feet, 'cause you'll fall back to sleep. There could be just you and I.
Tom Odell, grow old with me, or at least become more chronologically gifted. Isn't that right, Ian Lennox?
Yes. So, and I'm very old, I'm very gifted, I suppose.
Oh, exactly. Or experientially enhanced. Jessica Ward. Now, you've obviously, having been up in Harrogate recently, because, of course, you were there for the excitement that was Countryside Live.
And it was very exciting.
Very exciting. You didn't even know at that stage it was the home of Claire Margerrison. It's amazing. A new voice on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, Ian Lennox, that of Claire Margerrison. I'll do the formal introduction now. Claire Margerrison, Ian Lennox, Claire Margerrison.
Hello.
And, of course, Jessica, who has read your book, you know, which is great, because interesting, comparative terms, you know, English student, 4 books in a week, journalism student, 1 book, 6.5 weeks,
Alex,
6.5 months.
Stop being so mean.
You got there in the end, that's
I did,
important.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, so it was well worth considering. But the great news, of course, Sir Jessica, is how wonderfully kind Newcastle United actually have been, because they realised Sunderland were the only side not to have a single win in the game of association football. So what do? They decided to lose 2-0 to them. Was it 3-0? I don't know.
It's
very, very kind. I think commendations, Ian, to your team for obviously deciding, yeah, we don't need the points, so just go with it.
Well, actually, that, for the last two seasons in the past, we've cut them up. We've given them 6 points a season.
Exactly.
In the difference between relegation and staying up.
And we always know that if they change the manager before they're due to play you, all will work out well. So excellent stuff there.
I suspect there'll be a big difference when we play them at home, though.
Do you?
And as I... before, I've got a number of friends who are Sunderland supporters, and I went onto Facebook after the game and said, if anybody wants to bet me that Newcastle will finish higher than Sunderland, as I believe they will, I'll take them on. And a single Mackham who's come back to me.
The bitterness, Claire. Can you detect the bitterness in that?
I can tell.
You know, exactly. You see, those of us who happen to be Man City supporters, 5-1 against Crystal Palace, based in Middlesbrough, obviously a great win against that other side in Manchester. So it's just win-win these days, you know.
Well, not only that, I think, if you look at it, I think all the top teams apart from Man City are out, don't they?
I think...
But Tottenham's still in. They're not really a top team, are they? Sort of on the fringe of it. Well, they're not. They're sort of,
I couldn't possibly comment, but it's nice to have a home...
Oh, yes, you could.
It's nice to have a home tie against Hull City in the quarterfinals, is all I can say. Still, Liverpool are around. I think they could be outside.
Liverpool's still in, are they? Right, yes, of course they are, yeah.
Clip-clopping away in their own
But the three or four, I mean, the three ones you'd really worry about are Man United, Chelsea and Arsenal, and they're all out.
Yeah, well, there we have it, you see. Of course, Middlesbrough coming up on the sidelines there. Which is
yes, I hope they win it.
Yeah, well, there you are. It's the only trophy they have ever won, etc. Apart, of course, from the 1976 Anglo-Scottish Cup, but still. Anyway, moving on, because Claire, I'm not sure, do you have any football? Because, I mean, Harrogate Town and, of course, you know, are renowned for their own sort of excitement that they generate within the town of Harrogate.
Yeah, well, I was born in Bradford, so I would say I support Bradford City.
Oh, they had a moment in the sun, you know, about,
yeah,
15, 20 years
did.
Ago.
They did, and when they were playing a game that was on the radio or something, my whole family were listening. But I haven't really had much experience with football. I'm more of a rugby girl, I think.
Yeah,
well,
oh,
really?
You see,
yeah.
this is the critical thing,
no.
Because ultimately I need
Are
to...
Are you rugby union or rugby league?
I'd say rugby union more than rugby league.
Yeah.
Right. But which team do you support? Because Bradford haven't got a top rugby union side, have they?
I don't tend to support a team, but I do watch the games
I
can.
Oh,
with
yeah.
my dad. We get into it. But I think the sport I'm biggest about is F1. I watch that like when it's on.
So a Lewis Hamilton fan then?
No. I like Vettel and Button.
Jensen and Sebastian.
Yes. Love them.
But the critical question at this moment, Ian, is do you want to provide Jessica with a motivatory tune to actually see her through the next few hours at the University of Lincoln, where she heads off to do all sorts of other areas and such like? Because I think it's 9 o'clock snark if you start.
Mm-hmm.
Not in there. The bottom line is, Ian, are you going to go, it's a totally random choice, for number two cart or number one cart? Number two cart or number one cart?
I'll go for number two cart.
You're going for number two cart. If you'd gone for number one, you would have had the hacker, obviously, big routine. You've gone for number two, you've got Advance Australia Fair.
Oh.
I know this is going to fill your whole body with pride, Jessica. Advance
so pride,
Australia
Alex.
Fair. Because after all, what they did to Wales, you know, phenomenal, you know, and clearly the tension about South Africa having sort of just battled through but failing against your other country. And we have
the
had hacker, the
hacker. That'll shut them up.
Well,
we've had the hacker. I suppose it would be decent to give the Australians their time, you know, let their song be heard.
The National Orchestra of Australia there with Advance Australia Fair. Who would have thought that the Midweek Drive Morning Edition would have actually sort of gone to that restaurant? And it could have been the hacker.
Yeah,
a lot shorter as well, but still. Well done, Ian. Obviously, finger on the pulse there. Sort of sorted through. And Jessica will be humming that throughout the course of the day, no doubt.
I will be, yes.
Are they going to win?
I don't like to toot my own flute or anything, but I'm just going to wait till we see it on Saturday, isn't it?
Will you be watching?
I will be watching.
You will be watching.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'll make sure.
Being Southern Hemispheres, I'm not sure whether there's anything of interest in, us at all, in it for us at all, really.
some good rugby to watch, I think.
Claire, will you be tuned in for the World
Possibly,
Cup final?
Yeah, I should be.
Yeah.
See, 2003, it was an open day at the University of Lincoln when, of course, Johnny Wilkinson kicked that final touch. I was over there in the Minerva building, and now then, of course, called the main building, and it's just on in the corner, and I had to sort of say, I'm sorry, you might want to actually do that particular subject here, but this is the World Cup final ongoing, absolutely.
Now, my mate, Steve Black, used to coach Johnny Wilson. Johnny
Wilkinson. Exactly.
He was a fitness trainer for Johnny.
We know.
They're like brothers together.
And indeed, our other colleague, Arthur McKenzie, wrote the biography
yes,
of Steve Black.
Yeah.
So it's all good. And he's a fine chap and a key motivator. He used to be a bouncer, of course, Claire.
Oh, very nice.
Steve Black was, yeah.
You wouldn't want to argue with Steve Black.
No.
He could bench press nearly 600 pounds, apparently.
It's almost as good as you, Jessica, actually, so far, you know, in terms
yeah.
of working out.
Episode 7 of Alex, I think.
Okay, so moving on, we'll have a few sort of
thoughts.
I thought
you'd move on.
Well, we do have that opportunity to actually listen to the reprise of last night's musical selection, which, as we found out, comes from a fairly celebrity source. It's Cameron Tilbury's usual MapleStar Music and Media choice. You may well not be familiar with the artist, but possibly you've heard of the actress Andie MacDowell. Have you heard of the actress Andie MacDowell?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Well, the artist we're about to have a listen to, called Rainy, Very nice. Is, I see, not just an artist, but also a weather forecast at the same time. So it's routine. Rainey Qualley is actually the daughter of Andy McDowell. I know, go figure.
Small world.
Nothing responded when I put forward the line to Cameron last night that I was a bit concerned about the grammar. And I'm sure, Claire, you might sort of get a bit concerned about the grammar as well. And Ian, I don't know what you say, because it should be Johnny Cash and me, or Johnny Cash and I. Mm. Certainly not me and Johnny Cash.
Oh, no. I told you.
So there we have it, me and Johnny Cash. All right, excuse the grammar. Rainey Qualley, what did you make of that, Ian Lennox?
I quite liked it. I won't be singing it in a week's time because I've forgotten about
it's not
it.
Like, it's not like Advance Australia Fair, is it, really?
Oh, no.
Jessica's now left the studio.
Or even the hacker.
She left before we could play that, unfortunately.
I presume that was just coincidental.
She stormed out.
It was quite messy, actually, and we didn't want to.
Well, you should try to stop her getting out of here.
Yeah, I had to call security and everything. It was just a nightmare. But in the end, we thought, just let it go. That's important.
Never had me advanced on a shorthand class of enthusiasm.
Well, exactly. Exactly so. Claire, your first time you've actually heard one of Cameron Tilbury's Maplestar Music and Media tunes. What did you make of Me and Johnny Cash by Rainey Qualley?
It was quite jolly. I quite liked it. It's a good way to start the morning.
Nice. Ian, Claire Margerison, for using her full name because it's a very important sort of thing. Actually, as well as being not too far away from Betty's Tea Room in Harrogate, also used to listen to this show when she was a first year, 2 years ago. So she might have actually heard your voice and your dulcet tones. You might have actually heard Ian Lennox chuntering on.
I probably did when I was like half asleep in the morning.
Well, if you had, you'd be fully asleep.
That's unfair, Ian. You know, that's basically.
It's unfair myself, I mean, so surely.
It works extremely well. We need to talk about a couple of sort of key issues, which we'll be focused on in the second hour of the programme. First of all, winning, Ian. According to a recent survey by Mecca Bingo, apparently, Britons say winning money makes them as happy as finding the love of their life. What are your views on this? I mean, do you prefer to win money or find the love of your life? What? Where's the sort of Ian Lennox perspective?
I would say anybody who chose money over love would be absolutely stupid. And deserve everything they got, which would probably be misery. The number of people who have had sudden wealth and end up destitute and bankrupt and suicidal it's been well catalogued, hasn't it?
It's not just the time you spent in Manchester working for the Manchester Guardian, or indeed the Guardian, because it obviously changed its name from the Manchester Guardian in 1959, which was before probably you actually started working as a journalist, Ian. But there we are. It's a little piece of information there. Did you know that? That's when the Manchester Guardian stopped being the Manchester Guardian and just became the Guardian. 1959.
Yes, I remember 1960, I knew. I didn't work for the Guardian, certainly.
Fair enough then.
I used to work in the same building as the Guardian. The Manchester Evening News and the Guardian and the Daily Mail all worked from the same office at one time.
And what a fun time! What a fun time was had by all. In that
it was. I can tell you some stories about that.
I'm sure, and probably will, you know. But that's for another time. And the other key thing with celebrity hairdresser Jamie Stevens and media psychologist Emma Kenny is that apparently our research into men's biggest fears, the biggest fear for a fifth of men in the United Kingdom, is hair loss.
Oh, really?
It actually comes above their partner cheating or their entire internet search history being made public.
Wow.
Yeah, cut that back,
I'd take Yul Brynner in a heartbeat.
Exactly.
First world problems right there, isn't it?
Yeah, these are the critical sort of moments. Forget your sort of notion of Netflix and beasts of the world and all the rest of the bits and pieces. That's different.
Actually, Alex, I don't know about you, but I remember my friends went bald very, very young. Mm-hmm. And the compensation was that they didn't look any older for about 20 or 30 years.
There you are, you see. This is the key thing.
And now people shave their heads anyway, so.
You don't know where you're going.
So really, if you've got sticky old ears, that's the the main problem, because you can always shave your head and look fashionable, but if you've got sticky out with ears, we used to call somebody Wingnut in our office.
That's a bit unfair on Gary Lillipin and Daniel Craig.
It was just one of the sort of cruel jokes in the office.
See, unpolitically correct, Ian, very sad.
Well, people just said that, well, it was no malice in it, it was just, and he laughed at it as well.
You may say that, you may say it's all in fun, but really.
Yeah, I know, he used to go in a cupboard and cry, you know.
I mean, there was a song about the medicinal compounds that the scaffold actually did.
Oh, yes, and in the 60s,
yes. So don't go there, please. It's, anyway, enough of such stuff. Claire, any other questions you want to put to Ian? About life, the universe, or anything at this particular stage, really.
Please make it a simple one.
I don't think so. I think that we've grilled you enough this morning.
You mentioned Johnny Wilkinson earlier. And I used to train, go with Steve Black, and he had a gym in his house, or a garage outside his house, and all these parade of different machines. And he was a fitness fanatic, and I was the opposite. But anyway, he enticed me to go in on these number of machines. And I was on one of them, pedalling away or something like that. And he said, Johnny Wilkinson was on that this morning, doing considerably heavier weights than you are. I said, Johnny Wilkinson is a world-class athlete. I am not.
That's why I don't exercise.
It's all part of the rich tapestry, that's what we say. Coming up after the news, we're going to be speaking to the one and only Callum McCall, who's actually a relative to, of course, Ewan McCall, celebrating his centenary. In fact, he'll be performing at Liverpool and Salford and Gateshead. He'll be at Gateshead on November the 5th, the Sage Gateshead. A range of things. He'll be in the Barbican, London on February the 9th. But we'll be talking about the Young Birds and indeed the fabulous Callum McCall, who will be, as I say, sharing some magical things with us after the news at 9 o'clock. But Ian, because it's Claire's first show, I don't want to throw us straight into that line of those last two questions, so I'll take the mantle on. Have you had a reasonably interesting...
I think Claire's done very well this morning.
She's
got a mellifluous voice.
I like to send Alex off to a dictionary after the show.
Good idea.
Honey-coated. She is an English undergraduate, you know, so she's doing very well on that basis. So a mellifluous voice. Yeah, that's your CV.
I'm going to put it on my CV, yeah.
Don't say you said it. It'll spoil the fitness time.
So it's been okay for you, and will you return next week, Ian?
Yes, I will, please.
Excellent.
Fabulous.